Deutschlandfunk Kultur Klangkunst.
For a long time, I had been curious about different spiritual practices. I knew meditation was part of that.
Well, I started to meditate because I felt lost and going through a difficult time.
I started to meditate because I was looking for ways to help deal with really bad anxiety.
My anxiety works in such a way as it can pop up at any time, and it can be triggered by a kind of a whole variety of things. But it's more of almost a state of mind sometimes. But it only really becomes a conscious thing for me when I'm really feeling bad.
I started to meditate not really because I wanted to. I went to do a course on Buddhism, and apparently you needed to meditate. I was more interested in the meaning of life, really.
Well, when I was a little girl, I always wanted to know the meaning of life. And I just love the claim that meditation can change your mind.
I started to meditate after a trip to Wales during some kind of midlife crisis. Now, I set a timer on my phone when I go to this spot on a hill in some woods near where I live while walking Otis, my dog. And I find my internal monologue just sort of goes quiet or quieter. I've always kind of been able to go to nowhere, enjoyed nothingness. I remember doing it a lot as a teenager, staring at the wall in my bedroom as if the paint was drying, and just there sort of being. It drives my wife mad if she catches me.
How do you meditate? Wie meditierst du?
These days I meditate in a really simple way, which is mostly focusing on breathing. Find a quiet space, sit down, breathe deeply, focus my attention outward, so listen to all the sounds that are going on around me. And then sort of bring the attention in and focus on the breath. And just try and not think, which is impossible.
Do you think that you're supposed to try to think of nothing?
Now, if you try to think of something other than, like, what you're thinking about, you end up thinking about it anyway because you're trying not to think about it.
Das ist ein Gedanke.
My thoughts are like shadows in a garden that I produce. I see them, but I only see the shape of them. And I don't know the content, really. I just see the shape and I try to figure them out.
I I'm taking the time to breathe and notice them and to watch them float by like clouds.
Let them flow like clouds passing by in the sky without attaching them.
There's a whole kind of cloud of things kind of coming at you as if you were sort of floating through space.
Gedanken sehen wie Wolken am Himmel vorbei.
And you'll kind of just watch them go past. You don't try and catch them. You don't try and fix them or sort them out. You just observe them and say, okay, yeah, I see that.
Die Gedanken sehen wie Wolken.
And I observe them and I let them go.
Vorüber.
Am Himmel vorüber.
Am Himmel vorüber.
Just letting them pass.
You just let them go, really.
Du lass sie einfach gehen.
So the process of Vipassana meditation is that you have nothing except your observation of yourself, observation of the sensations of your body. And those observations are to be made with equanimity, with no judgment as to whether they're pleasant or unpleasant sensations.
The Buddha taught two types of meditation, really, or two main types, concentration and insight. So I usually alternate. I ground myself, feeling the sensations and effect of gravity in my body, and then do a brief body scan. If I'm doing concentration meditation, I then mainly focus on the breath, with the aim of it absorbing all of my attention. If I have the intention to practice insight meditation, then I begin in the same way, but instead of focusing exclusively on the breath, I notice whatever arises. I do this with the intention of not getting drawn into the content.
And then I start to focus on energy moving up and down my body. And I usually start with my lower spine and I imagine it coming up my spine and into my head and around through my nose and out again. And then I try to think of it going the other way down through my body and down into my arms and legs.
Other types of meditation, such as the metta bhavana, cultivation of loving kindness meditation, helped me to be less self-absorbed, to feel more connected with other beings, and more generally to cultivate positive mental states. I wish sequentially four different people well: myself, a friend, a so-called neutral person, and a difficult person. In the final stage, the fifth stage of the practice, I explore the possibility of wishing all four people well without bias. Then I broaden the range of well-wishing from the four people to include more and more beings until I'm wishing all life in the universe well.
I feel like meditating when I lose myself in my art. Yeah, just in general, to be able to concentrate, because everything at the moment is about losing your concentration. Social media, it's all about like putting a spray of confusion over you and of, what's that word, when you lose the thread of something, you get abgelenkt. I don't know the English word at the moment. Ablenken. Distract, of course, distraction.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see into your imagination.
When I'm painting or writing or drawing or gardening, there are all of these things in which I'm so engrossed in the task at hand or whatever it is that I'm doing.
I try to mich versenken, sink down in myself. Wenn ich mich mit etwas künstlerisch beschäftige oder wenn ich ein Buch lese, wenn ich einen Film schaue, ich kann sehr stark absorbiert werden von solchen Dingen. Ich bekomme zum Beispiel regelmäßig Gänsehaut, wenn ich bestimmte Passagen in Musikstücken höre. I try to mich versenken, sink down in myself, versenken. Sich versenken, to sink, yeah, sink into myself while I'm composing or when I listen to music, when I watch a film.
There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination.
I mean, I found that playing music a lot, you know, this sensation as you move through a piece of music, whether it's a piece one's sort of learnt and is playing through or it just improvising, that engagement with the music literally unfolding.
That would place your mind into your active performative mind into a space that you simply couldn't reach it by trying to through conscious structured thought, if that makes sense.
And I suppose you could, I mean, people talk about this state of playing in which events take place, music emerges without conscious thought.
I like to verwandeln, is that transform into something. Und es können auch Objekte sein, die tot sind, also die nicht organisch sind. Ich kann mich in ein Buch verwandeln zum Beispiel oder ich kann mich in ein Kabel verwandeln. Ich kann mich in einen Synthesizer verwandeln. I can transform into a cable or a book or a synthesizer and then I have the best communication with this object.
I think you just begin to work in a way that serves the collaboration, serves the production of music, serves listening, because you're no longer trying to force the issue. And it's also a question of just letting things happen, just to allow things to happen. You're not thinking ahead, you're not thinking retroactively, you're just thinking about how do I work with this material right now.
Well, for me, there are many things that I do that mirrors meditation. It is listening to music. It is doing something physical, like walking. And it's being outside in nature. And I'm very lucky that I live in a quite special part of the world where the nature is really spectacular. And I think growing up in this environment shaped me, so that's also a point I woke up to heavy rain this morning, and it was just fantastic. I love the sound and feeling of it.
Listening can be very like meditation if one just really listens carefully to every sound, listens to the relationships of sounds and where they are spatially and how they come and go. So it's kind of deep listening, to coin the Pauline Oliveros phrase.
I'm totally down with that, because I am a kind of longtime associate with the late Pauline Oliveros, who came up with this concept, or at least named a concept called deep listening, where you're kind of doing that. You're listening to everything around you, and you're understanding that that's what reality is actually based in, and not some kind of construct.
The practice of deep listening, as it has developed, explores the difference between hearing and listening. My practice is to listen to everything all the time and remind myself when I am not listening. I invite you to take a moment now to notice what you are hearing and to expand your listening to continually include more.
I often just sit and start listening very carefully to every sound I can hear in great detail. But again, without thinking, wow, this is a lovely sound, or this is a horrible sound.
It's sometimes good to have a source of quiet sounds to specifically concentrate on. I actually happen to have one built into my head because I have tinnitus, and I'm constantly hearing a high-pitched sine wave at around 10,500 hertz in both ears. So at any time, I can just sit back and listen to my own head as a source of sound to concentrate on.
There's a whole genre of YouTube videos where guys restore various items, rusty old appliances or kitchen implements or anything really, and they just have these nicely produced videos where they restore stuff. You don't get any talking, but you do get lots of all the sounds of the tools and all the equipment that they're using. And generally for me, you know, if I'm looking to relax, or if it's the end of the day and I'm trying to go to sleep, or if I'm just have anxiety or whatever, need something to calm myself down, I don't really meditate. That's just not something I've ever done. But I will put on videos like this, and I think it's the combination of all of the sounds of, you know, sanders and hammers, and the best part is always when they they put things through the sandblaster, that's always the best part, because, you know, you'll take something really rusty or it's got a lot of grime or other buildup on it, and you put it in the sandblaster and it's like erasing all of that stuff.
I find that sometimes a certain level of noise and busyness can bring on a state of meditation as well. For example, sitting on a crowded subway train and just closing my eyes and hearing all the sounds and experiencing the sensations, that can also be meditative.
Mind the gap.
Actually, I find sitting on an airplane with the rumble of the engine to be meditative as well. And then once the plane is in the air, I like to notice how the various signals inside the plane, the ones that the seat belt sign when it goes on and there's a certain ding or beep, when the two engines come close to being in phase and then out of phase, as they're sort of spinning up to full speed. The sound of an aircraft, a helicopter, or an airplane passing overhead, I actually find to be an object that you can really focus on and contemplate. So when something passes overhead, I find my attention is really drawn towards the bending of the sound as it approaches, this sort of Doppler effect.
The last few years I've been playing the hurdy-gurdy a lot, which is a... Well... In its basis, it's a drone instrument. A drone instrument where one can actually play notes to. But there's something just in the droning that one can get very lost in. You sit the instrument on your lap. It's wood and gut and wire. And you turn the wheel, bow the strings, and the whole thing starts to vibrate. You get it in tune. Nicely in tune, so I mean it is in tune, but when you slowly tune it up, that instant where it suddenly hits a really beautiful harmony with the different strings, it kind of becomes part of your body in a sense because of these vibrations. And then in the sound, there's a lot to hear, there's a lot to listen to, there's so much going on in terms of overtones. Just watching the wheel go around, you can almost fall into it. And I find that, you know, I can actually, this is a place where I really do lose a sense of time. I can be doing it for a long time. And I can use it like in the same way as I would approach a meditation. But most of the time I don't even think about it like that. It's just something where my mind becomes much clearer, much more still. And at the end of it, I always feel very refreshed mentally. And all the stronger to carry on and face all the shit that goes on.
I was in the house on my own of a weekend, and so I think I was watching the telly, having a few beers, and I was just thinking about craving, and then I suddenly had a really visceral experience of craving in terms of noticing that I'm thinking all the time. I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Am I going to go to the fridge to have a piece of cake? Am I going to have another beer? When am I going to have another beer? Am I interested in this program? Should I turn over? Should I put a record on? Should I read a book? What should I do? Should I spend some time with the dog? And it was all about, like, what choices do I want to make? What do I want? All of it. And I just realized that's what my life is. It's just being drawn between different things and being pulled forward by all of them all the time. And it was the most intense bodily understanding of that I've ever had. And I had to laugh. I found myself just sort of roaring with laughter. I thought, this is just ridiculous. I'm just dragged along by the nose by all of these cravings all of the time. Again, it's something that I'd understood intellectually and it made sense to me, but that felt like an actual experience of it, you know, an actual real experience of, oh, this is what it's like. This is what it's like all the time.
So that is the fundamental and funny question about meditating, right? Is all the other things that come in, and then there's all the question about, am I really meditating right now if all these other things are coming in? I'm so new at meditation, I'm not quite sure what to do with those other thoughts, the other thinking. And I'm not quite sure if that thinking is part of the meditation or not, or if it's an invader, or if I'm doing it wrong.
The way I've always looked at it is, well, I'll sit here and think of nothing. Think of nothing.
However, that's very hard to do, because as soon as I sit down, I start thinking about the world, what I have to do that day, that I should get up and feed the cats, I need another cup of coffee.
Oh, I must remember to fill the car up with petrol tomorrow.
Repetition of thoughts going round and round and round.
Round and round in circles.
I want this, I don't want that. I want this, I don't
want
that.
I want this, I don't want that.
Ich will dies, ich will nicht das.
Ich will das nicht.
And even while you sit alone in your room and you start thinking about, if you were talking out aloud to the voice in your head that you identify with, everybody would recognize it as insane. But then on the other hand, I don't know, then what if I do that, then your character is... But I wonder what happens if I go... Oh, that would be dreadful if that happened. I just hope that the... Oh, no, I hadn't thought of that before. And you reincarnate continuously into some new thought form.
Change in my mind. Life had nothing left for me. Change in my mind. I was blind and couldn't see. changing my mind. All at once I'm feeling free.
Think of nothing.
Denke an nichts.
Denken Sie an nichts.
Who is your mind in relation to you?
Mein Geist steht hinter mir. Manchmal schwebt er über mir, aber meistens steht er hinter mir. So I said that my mind is standing behind me or hovering on top of me.
My mind is, on one level, the tool which will free me, and on another level, it's the jailer which enslaves me.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind.
Are you an observer of your thoughts? Yes, I am an observer of my thoughts. I think... I think, there you go. I think about my thoughts.
Bist du ein Beobachter deiner Gedanken?
I am an observer of my thoughts.
I am, insofar as I'm aware.
Who is observing these thoughts? Wenn ich meine Hand bewege, frage ich mich oft, ist das meine eigene Hand oder ist es eine Hand, die von mir, meinem Gehirn, meinem Körper oder etwas anderem gelenkt wird, das mich durchdringt? When I move my hand, I wonder what it is that moves my hand, if it is my own thoughts or if it is something that
durchdringen,
permeates me.
I am an observer of my thoughts, and at times I can see that very clearly. I can separate the thought from the thinker. In fact, who is the thinker? When you start to look closely, you find that there isn't really anybody there that you can identify.
There is nobody there. Es ist niemand da.
Hier ist niemand.
Thoughts appear. They are observed. But nowhere can I find the observer. There's just experience arising in each moment.
It almost feels like there's two of me.
Two voices. The very conscious thought who is observing everything, and then the subconscious.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try. Just the two of us. Just the two of us.
There's too much on my mind. There's too much on my mind. And I can't sleep at night thinking about it. There's too much on my mind.
The idea of the commenting voice in your head is a weird one in relation to meditation, because in many ways that's one of the things that I want to get away from through meditation. Whether that's like an inner critic or, I don't know, the sort of smart ass that I carry around with me. It's good to get a break from that
entity, as to who that is, I don't know if that is me or a part of me. It's not someone else. So I suppose that is me.
You know, I don't know what me is, and that's a whole other subject that I could ramble on for hours. I do think about who me is.
So I, as an identity, I don't believe is a fixed thing anymore. So I am certainly not that commenting voice in my head. I suppose I see the commenting voice in my head as a, I suppose you could say a sort of brain function, a sort of collection of neural pathways, perhaps. Oh gosh, views, fears, opinions that have collected over the years because of all the different myriad conditions that affect my life, maybe culture, age, generation, class, family history, generational history.
And yet the essence of who you are, the I am, that is nothing to do with person, but it gets mixed up with the personal, the forms that the person identifies with, that make up the person.
So it's interesting how prayer is and isn't like meditation. Because, at least for the traditions I grew up in, and still am in to many extents, prayer is so much more this address of a being compared to what I know of meditation, which doesn't have that as much. I've certainly learned techniques of meditation where I'm imagining another being in relation to me, but it's not a being I'm meditating to, whereas prayer is often a praying to a being, a deity. But I will say that prayer and meditation end up being very similar in that I've long understood that the power of prayer is simply in the saying of things, in the body feeling the saying of things. And with prayer, posture matters. I think the whole reason why one might get on one's knees to pray isn't, I think, ultimately because you've got to subject yourself before a deity, but just because whatever you do that's intentional with your body when you're in meditation is going to have an effect. So I find that prayer is a lot like meditation.
I think it works on various levels. One level is the physical. Simply you're engaging the body, the vocal cords, and it's kind of deep down. It feels like it's really into the chest. So that, I think the repetition is important. It allows you to become concentrated. It kind of quietens the mind.
having that anchor for the mind, so the thoughts, the subside.
So Buddhism would say that we have this potential, our Buddha nature, it's sometimes called, and it's always accessible, according to Buddhism. And how do we access it? There's a sense in which we can stir it up, in some ways access it, and maybe even occasionally live from it.
Before you slip into unconsciousness,
so here's the big question.
Mm-hmm.
What is consciousness?
I don't know.
Well, break it down. What does it mean? What does it mean to you?
Like your senses, your like awareness, as you described, of like, you know, what's going on around.
But could consciousness have many levels?
Perhaps, like, maybe we're on like a mid-level of consciousness or something.
What is a mid-level of consciousness?
I don't know, like we're not fully conscious, but...
How could we be more conscious?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Okay.
Waking up from the dream in the Matrix or whatever, I don't know. Now that we watched that movie, is...
What is consciousness? What is consciousness? I don't know what consciousness is.
I'm going to say that it is sentient awareness.
Bewusstsein.
Bewusstsein.
That doesn't require intellect and intellectual or cognitive functions.
Nobody until I started meditating had actually asked me what I thought consciousness really was. And okay, sure, there's philosophical books about that, maybe even psychological books, but the idea that there was a kind of direct experiential method of exploration of what in fact consciousness was, and that there was something to discover there, and that maybe you could only discover it by meditating, not talking about or thinking about meditating, but actually doing it, that was something new to me, and it really totally changed how I felt about the world, I guess, and myself.
Was ist Bewusstsein? What is consciousness? Bewusstsein ist eine Art Echo, eine Rückkopplung mit der Welt draußen. Ich bin mir nicht sicher, ob man Bewusstsein empfinden könnte oder wahrnehmen oder analysieren könnte, wenn man keine Rückkopplung hätte mit der Außenwelt. Bewusstsein entsteht meiner Ansicht nach eigentlich erst durch das Feedback von draußen. You can only talk about consciousness as an echo. You need the outer world to reflect mit der Welt, yourself. Bewusstsein entsteht meiner Ansicht nach eigentlich erst durch das Feedback von draußen. Und ich finde besonders interessant, was das Unterbewusstsein ist, weil es so unglaublich stark ist. Es ist viel, viel stärker als das wache Bewusstsein, als der Intellekt. And it demands another language.
I personally believe that consciousness is awareness.
Bewusstsein ist Gewahrsein.
Consciousness is awareness of self.
I would define consciousness as that which is aware of itself.
I think consciousness is an awareness of my internal and external self.
Awareness, yeah, to try and be aware. But consciousness changes all the time.
So for me, consciousness is
an evolving state of being, state of mind.
But consciousness is all pervasive. There is nothing that is not consciousness. So it is not separate from the mind. It's not like you have a consciousness.
We are
consciousness.
Yes, seeing Bewusstsein.
Do you do a kind of meditation where the goal is to transcend? Funnily enough, in transcendental meditation, the goal is not to transcend. You could say the process is one of transcending, but it's not something you do. It's something that happens, but it's not the goal. My favorite metaphor is like being in the cinema and the film is running and you're watching the film and then the film kind of runs out. We're talking a celluloid film. Imagine the film runs out, but the projector remains on. So there's the white light. That's my favorite metaphor.
I would call it the cinema behind the eyes. It's like the Bilder aus meiner Kindheit oder aus meiner Vergangenheit aufrufe, die plötzlich von selbst wie so ein Kino ablaufen. It's like me moving, taking myself and taking me into the cinema of my memory. Ja. Das ist für mich ein Zustand des Transzendierens.
It's only explainable by the absence of other things. The absence of thoughts and the absence of expectation and planning and waiting. In the absence of those feelings, if you can call them feelings, or the absence of those ways of being, leaves you with a simple awareness that once the thoughts have gone, something remains, which is. Something remains, which is.
So the sense of there being a boundary around the self and a separation between the self and the content of experience dissolves away, and the self merges with the world into a space which is neither completely the self nor completely the world, but a kind of interzone, sort of magical space in which consciousness and the world that consciousness creates mingle in magical ways. And within that space, it's also possible to access a level of wisdom that seems to come from beyond the normal world. So one can ask questions, one have glimpses into other dimensions of experience, one can have perhaps glimpses of what's described sometimes as the deathless state, something that goes beyond birth and death, something that goes beyond individual personhood.
This is the aim of spiritual practice, your connectedness with the deeper dimension is not lost, even when you're engaged in daily activities. And then you come out of it again.
The main inaccurate thing which people who haven't meditated or have just started meditating seem to believe about it is that you have to stop yourself thinking, and that a proper state of meditation is one where there aren't any thoughts.
I think that the most common misconception is that you have to be a certain kind of person to meditate, and that only certain kinds of people can do it.
Meditation comes in many forms. Mindfulness practice itself has been radically exploited in many ways as a kind of self-help practice, particularly within corporate environments.
I think you also need some sort of teachings about wisdom alongside meditation to get the real benefit. I don't think on its own, you know, it's a bit like having a car. Well, a car's great, but you do need a place to go. I'm going to use that metaphor.
You could imagine that you're meditating, that you're doing something spiritual or religious, when in fact you're really just kind of copying a posture and imitating something rather than actually really doing that. One of the kind of key instructions for some of the meditation practices I've done is actually don't meditate. In other words, you have to let go of the idea that you're meditating when you meditate in order to actually let some aspect of your mind naturally arise.
And every method eventually needs to be left behind. You don't need it. It's the last thing you leave behind.
Meditation's changed my life by showing me that there are skillful means with which to overcome the challenges that I feel and face as a human living on a difficult planet, to which I quite often contribute difficulty.
It is a training, essentially, that helps you to really concentrate and focus in like a microscope into noticing what your mind does. And when you can do that, you can really help yourself in terms of mental health.
I think that people can punish themselves by taking on too much because they don't feel they deserve to stop.
When you meditate, you're opening yourself up to different levels of consciousness and getting out of that kind of mundane everyday thinking and opening up the possibility of there being something beyond the mundane everyday.
The meditation, 10 minutes, really helps, honestly. 30 minutes, even more so. Just giving it that lousy 10 minutes a day really can help center oneself.
Turn and face the strange. Changes. Don't want to be a richer man. Changes.
Turn and face the strange.
Changes.
It's gonna have to be a different man.